Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, November 28th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. The federal government's fifth climate assessment adds to existing science about how climate change will impact Idaho. Thomas Adams pleads guilty to unlawful discharge of a firearm into a dwelling in a September 5th shooting that rocked Moscow's downtown area. Idaho Health and Welfare wants $119,000 in legal bills paid by Attorney General Raul Labrador's office. North Idaho College Accreditation Agency, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, says Board of Trustees at the two-year college has made little progress in saving the college's accreditation. And Moscow Committee approves extension in lieu of Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee interagency agreement. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News, the Pacifica Radio Network, and the Public News Service. You're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho. I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The man who shot at least 80 rounds from his South Almond Street apartment in Moscow in the early morning hours of September 5th, causing multi-hour SWAT team shutdowns of most of the streets downtown and points west, has pled guilty to felony unlawful discharge of a firearm at a dwelling house. 54-year-old Thomas Adams faces up to 15 years in prison. The Daily News reports Adams is currently participating in Veterans Treatment Court in Nez Perce County and is also participating in inpatient treatment through Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Treatment Court. A judge in Latah County District Court has scheduled a status conference on the case for February 12th. A police report says they found 15 firearms in Adams' apartment after the shooting, along with 114 spent casings and hundreds of rounds of live ammunition. A couple hours before the shooting, a Moscow police officer escorted Adams to his apartment after Adams contacted police saying people on motorcycles were shooting at him because they wanted money. He had won in the lottery while serving in the Persian Gulf. When police brought him to the apartment, according to court documents, they saw three assault-style weapons on the floor of his living room. Former KRFP DJ Sierra Valentine, who lives on Jackson Street and whose backyard abuts Adams' apartment building, told KRFP in an interview the day of the shooting, Adams began shooting at her and her house as she was walking her dog on Jackson Street at 2 a.m. Valentine said bullets hit her home and karaoke shed. She recently published a witness statement expressing ongoing trauma and changes in her life brought on by the neighbor who displayed creepy and irrational behavior towards her in the time leading up to the shooting. Valentine expressed concern that Adams is not in jail at this time. Thick fog caused a 30-vehicle collision on Interstate 86 near Pocatello yesterday morning near Pocatello Regional Airport. Idaho State Police wrote in a news release, due to the fog, vehicles slowed down suddenly. Commercial and personal vehicles collided with one another, causing a chain reaction of approximately 30 vehicles. The Associated Press reports after the accident, injured people traveled to local hospitals in personal vehicles, and an ambulance transported one injured person to a hospital. Police blocked traffic on Interstate 86 between exits 56 and 59 for 7 hours while emergency responders cleared the scene. The Idaho Health and Welfare Department says it wants the state attorney general's office to pay $119,000 in legal fees it spent fighting Attorney General Raul Labrador's investigative demands earlier this year. Shortly after taking office in January, Labrador's office cast a wide investigative net in March, demanding Health and Welfare Department Director Dave Jeppesen and Health Department employees turn over information about the grants they gave to local community groups to address the impacts of the pandemic. Labrador said the health department had allocated federal pandemic money to community groups that serve children outside of the age range specified by the legislature, which was between 5 and 12 years old. Jeppesen and the employees filed a petition in court to quash Labrador's demands for information, and a judge gave a partial ruling saying health and welfare did not have to turn over all the documents Labrador wanted. The judge prohibited Labrador from continuing prosecuting the case, citing a conflict of interest, but said Labrador could appoint a special prosecutor to pursue the case. Labrador did so, and Special Prosecutor Christopher Boyd withdrew the investigative demands in early October. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, the Health and Welfare Department filed court documents today saying their department was, quote, required to hire counsel as a direct result of Attorney General Labrador's conflict of interest. The Attorney General's office, under previous Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin, and apparently under Labrador, both in 2022 and this year, had given legal advice to the Health and Welfare Department saying their grant programs were legal. Labrador withdrew that legal opinion in March, saying it was inaccurate. The Attorney General's office issued a statement today saying the Department of Health and Welfare spent millions of taxpayer dollars in ways not permitted by the law. It is unfortunate that they continue to waste taxpayer resources and refuse to take responsibility for their actions. The federal government's fifth climate assessment, released earlier this month, adds to existing science about how climate change will impact Idaho. As previously reported, the fifth climate assessment found extreme heat, flooding, wildfires, and other climate hazards will threaten human health, ecosystems, and infrastructure in the Northwest, which under the climate assessment includes all of Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. Conservation Voters for Idaho Program Director Ryan McGoldrick told the Idaho Capital Sun drought and water scarcity will change growing seasons, harvest schedules, and food production in Idaho. McGoldrick said the report underscores the need to take swift and widespread action to save the climate. He said, "My biggest takeaway with national and local reports is how comprehensive the changes brought on by climate change are going to be. The more you dig into the specific areas, the more you realize the immense challenges created by climate change in every aspect of our lives. While a lot of reports found that it is an uphill battle, there is still a path to avoid the worst-case scenario impacts from climate change." The Idaho Capital Sun reports the city of Boise is developing a climate action plan. The city's 2021 climate action roadmap calls for carbon neutral city government operations and 100% clean electricity by 2035 and a fully carbon neutral community by 2050. Boise Climate Action Manager Steve Hubble said the city's climate risk assessment identified 8 key areas of impact, and 6 of those are related to water. Hubble said the city is focused on an advanced water treatment project for the city to collect used water from industries and businesses and purify it for reuse. Hubble said the city is leading, but ultimately the long-term success of achieving climate goals will really be driven by residents and businesses, and we need their help and participation. Other climate projects in Idaho include Federal Inflation Reduction Act money for tree canopy projects in Boise, Nampa, Haley, Rexburg, Pocatello, Malad, and Soda Springs. 3 Idaho agencies are working on a long-term $29 million project to create a network of electric vehicle charging stations near major highways. Several Idaho school districts have received federal funding to upgrade their school bus fleets to zero-emission electric buses. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
The Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities says in its latest report on North Idaho College that NIC students, administration, faculty, and staff clearly love the college, but the Board of Trustees, which has a 3-2 far-right majority supported by the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee, has made little progress in saving the accreditation of the 2-year community college in Coeur d'Alene. The Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, which is NIC's accreditation agency, has given the school until April 1st, 2025, to return to good standing or lose accreditation. The college has gone through years of turmoil, starting in 2021 after the November 2020 election of a far-right majority on its Board of Trustees. The latest report by the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities is based on a campus visit by a commission peer evaluation team between October 30th and November 1st. There was another visit during the spring semester, which came after the commission placed NIC under a show cause sanction in February because of problems with finance, student retention, and governance. If North Idaho College loses accreditation, students will not be able to transfer credits, and the college would be ineligible for federal grants. The spokesman review quoted the new report, saying the evaluation team was impressed by the resilience, dedication, and positive energy of NIC's students, administration, faculty, and staff. Their love for the institution and their belief in its potential were evident throughout the many interviews conducted on site. The report says the administration under President Nick Swain has made progress on the commission's recommendations. While the report acknowledged hard work by a board subcommittee that must update board policies and has produced statements, they said staff and students are skeptical of that work because the board's actions contradict statements that they make. The report said, frankly, that skepticism is validated throughout the evaluation team's analysis. The report is critical of the board, which now has two presidents on the payroll, adding to the school's financial woes. The 3-2 far-right majority on the board voted last December to put President Nick Swain on administrative leave and hired Greg South as interim president. Swain successfully sued NIC, and a district judge ordered NIC to reinstate him as president. However, the board has appealed Swain's lawsuit to the state Supreme Court and has declined to terminate Greg South's contract. North Idaho College continues to pay $235,000 a year to Greg South, along with Swain's $230,000 salary. The report says of the two-president situation, quote, "The board has taken deliberate steps to defer a resolution." The report says unnamed board members told the peer evaluation team the board continued to keep South on contract in hopes that they could bring him back as president. Swain, who the board hired during a brief period in 2022 when the board did not have a far-right majority, has remained popular with students, faculty, and staff, a fact the commission team noted. The report from the commission said these board members stated that they did not support Dr. Swain as a permanent president and that the rationale behind not negotiating a termination of Dr. South's contract was, indeed, so that the board could reinstate Dr. South as president in the event that Dr. Swain's contract could be terminated. The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday recommended the city move forward with approving the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee's Memorandum of Agreement with the city. Deputy City Supervisor Tyler Palmer explained at yesterday's meeting the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee had been operating under an interagency agreement with Moscow and other jurisdictions in the area on the Palouse that expired in August.
The Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee, as you are all aware, is the entity through which we cooperate regionally on water resource concerns and are working toward an alternate water supply. We recently had a changeover in our executive director for the Police Based Offer Committee. Our previous executive director had been working on an update to the agreement. When she put in her notice, that delayed that update to that agreement. And so our current agreement is expired. And so as we work, we didn't want to have to rush the updates to the agreement, as there are some things that beg updating in that agreement, and we all need time to make those edits and then bring it back through our respective right. governing bodies. So rather than operate without an agreement, our legal team drafted a memorandum of agreement that just extends the provisions that are in the current agreement through next August. And that will give us time to draft the updates, make the adjustments, and take them through the respective governing bodies and in order to have a new agreement in place. And so this is just to bridge that gap is what this is. And so it just continues the provisions that are in our current agreement. And we move forward. The city of Pullman, it went through the city of Pullman's last council cycle, and their council has approved that. So they've got a signed copy by from their mayor, and we're just going through this process with y'all so that we can get ours in place as well.
That was Moscow Deputy City Supervisor Tyler Palmer speaking to the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday afternoon. The Administrative Committee put the interagency agreement revision on the consent agenda for the next City Council meeting. The Pullman City Council will hear a report tonight from the engineering firm Parametrics on the final draft of their study for the use of the right-of-way the state purchased for a north bypass of the city. The plan for the north bypass ended when the legislature removed it from the revised code of Washington, and then the state sold some of the right-of-way to the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport to facilitate its runway expansion project. In 2016, the Washington Department of Transportation contacted the city of Pullman and Whitman County and offered to give them the remaining right-of-way at no cost, with the stipulation it be used for road and street purposes only. The remaining right-of-way extends from Airport Road North and curves around the city and terminates at U.S. Highway 195. The city and county agreed to hire Parametrics to do an engineering study of the remaining right-of-way, and Parametrics will be on hand tonight to present the final draft of their study. Also at tonight's City Council meeting, City Public Works Director Sean Wells will give a presentation on the underground infrastructure component of the downtown revitalization project called Project Downtown. There will also be a presentation at tonight's Pullman City Council meeting on Everbridge Emergency Communication Systems. The council will vote tonight on amending an ordinance changing the definition of accessory living quarters. The two changes would allow people who are not relatives or not household employees to occupy accessory living quarters and allow the owners to charge rent. The council will also vote on amending the fee schedule for parks and recreation programs and facility use starting in January. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall.
Wildlife corridor conservation is in the spotlight in Congress. Last week, the Senate Environment and Public Works Subcommittee on Fisheries, Water, and Wildlife held a hearing on wildlife corridors, which are important for animal migration in the winter and summer months and can be impeded by fractured landscapes. Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis is a member of the subcommittee. Madeline West with the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, or TRCP, says protecting wildlife corridors is the top issue for hunting and fishing organizations.
Abundant wildlife populations of big game species and small game species, even like waterfowl, are important to the TRCP and our partners and the 14 million hunters in this country.
Corridor conservation has been a bipartisan issue. It was a priority at a recent meeting in Wyoming of the Western Governors Association. A Department of the Interior secretarial order from 2018 under the Trump administration provided financial support for research and on-the-ground work to conserve corridors. The order was expanded under the Biden administration. West says this support has been helpful, but the federal government could make more strategic investments.
Dedicated and consistent federal funding would be very valuable. And importantly, it's critical that coordination between federal, state, and tribal agencies, as well as private landowners and hunting, fishing, and conservation organizations continue and be fostered.
West says conservation work has not just happened on the federal level. She says there's lots of opportunities to work with private landowners on voluntary conservation projects.
Some of the best wildlife habitat and corridor habitat is on private land in this country because private landowners have done so much proactive, voluntary conservation work on their own to have outstanding habitat quality.
For Wyoming News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service, there is ice fog in the area at this point. Areas of freezing fog after 7 p.m. tonight, otherwise cloudy, low 21. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 36. Areas of freezing fog before 10 a.m., partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 20. High of 36 tomorrow. On Thursday, 60% chance of snow, mainly after 4 p.m. Cloudy, high 33. New snow accumulation, less than half an inch. 80% chance of snow Thursday night, low 26. Overnight snow accumulation Thursday, around an inch. And on Friday, 80% chance of precipitation. Snow likely before 10 a.m., then rain and snow, high 36. New accumulation, less than half an inch. Currently 23. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear on KRFP every day, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartas. Have a good night. Coming up next, an episode of Noise Filter, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Rude Awakening is on at 7:30, live in the studios, 7:30 to 9:30, and at 9:30, Brent Bentz in. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Today's the day. Giving Tuesday, a generous donor will match all donations to KRFP up to $1,000.
New donors?
Send your donation for the match.
Previous donors?
Send your donation for the match.
How do I donate?
Just go to KRFP.org and click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge grant. You will be able to pay directly through PayPal or mail your check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
So I go to KRFP.org and I click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge grant if I want to pay through PayPal, or I can mail my check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
That's right.
I have a feeling you've already donated.
You bet I have.
You talked me into it. I'm going to donate right now.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Alderi, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Hope Hickerson, and I'm a health education specialist and reporter. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health education expert,
that's me, talk about what you need to know to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy.
For more information about Noise Filter, your public health podcast, and to watch and share our incredible informative animations, please visit us at noisefiltershow.com.
And if you like what you hear, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to us. So, let's get started.
Racism in U.S. maternal health care system. As anyone who listens to our show or lives in the United States knows well, Healthcare in the U.S. is anything but perfect. From policy-related inaction to systemic dysfunction in hospitals throughout the country, many patients end up suffering from preventable issues. That being said, perhaps the group that suffers the most in our country are low-income people of color. Quality of care tends to be dramatically lower for this group of people, and this is especially highlighted in the context of maternal health.
Obstetrician Keisha Gaither has spent her last few years of her career studying and documenting the inequity between Black and white mothers in her hometown of Brooklyn, New York. Being an obstetrician, Dr. Gaither particularly focuses on the health outcomes of expecting mothers. She found that for a number of systemic reasons, Black women were predisposed to underlying health conditions that would make the pregnancy risky for both mother and child. These conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, HIV, and high blood pressure all increase the chances of prolonged illnesses or death. In comparison, the patients she saw in her previous practice while working in Palm Beach, Florida, quote, were listened to and offered help, treatment, and labor pain relief as soon as needed.
In order to address systemic health issues in her new clinic, Dr. Gaither described starting a program called A Mother's Heart. She did this after observing a high incidence of peripartum cardiomyopathy in Black pregnant women with undiagnosed heart diseases. Dr. Gaither's program was designed for women of the African diaspora and Latin American countries, with the aim to help identify pregnant people at risk of developing cardiovascular disease, which often goes undiagnosed. Screening pregnant mothers for cardiovascular disease early on in their pregnancies can drastically help the outcomes for both mother and child. Proper screening protocols and regular access to obstetricians and cardiologists during pregnancy can help ensure that both mother and child are healthy.
A question we should all be asking is, why are Black people at a greater risk for developing these complications? For many years, the most common explanation in medicine was that there were differences in genetic factors. I came up through medicine learning that. So that, just to give you an idea of how recent that is. The argument for this was largely based on the fact that birth outcome disparities between African-American and non-African-American white women is not unique to the United States, but also observed in other countries where there are significant African-American populations, and that disparities were observed between even most wealthy Black women, who we would assume were being treated by the best doctors available, and their white counterparts. Now, this came into question, however, when one study found that Black women who received care from Black OBGYNs were less likely to experience preterm live births compared to Black women who received care from a white OBGYN. And when another study found that Black women who received care from Black physicians were less likely to deliver by cesarean section compared to Black women who received care from white physicians.
Based on these and other studies, Johns Hopkins, along with many other top hospitals throughout the country, ended up stating that observable disparities are therefore a result of racism, not race. While blatant racism might not always be involved, structural racism that exists outside of hospital settings and cultural racism likely play large roles. Experiencing racism and bias throughout one's life are stressors that can affect immune function and functions that control blood circulation. The effect of these stressors can be amplified in pregnant Black women because of the added stress that comes with pregnancy. And see, that's what people don't talk about, Dr. Dairy. Like the unseen stress that literally changes the way our bodies function, right? How we handle things. Like, that's what people don't realize.
100%. So that's called weathering. In America, Black women age faster than white women do as a result of microaggressions, racism, structural discrimination, and all of that plays a significant role in a Black female's body. Now, when you look at Black males, the same phenomenon, but it was dubbed another name for Black men. It's called John Henryism. John Henry was the coal miner who, you know, was supposedly kind of beat the machine. But as soon as he finished the race doing, you know, mining coal, man versus machine, he dropped dead and died, right? That's the lore of John Henry, who was Black. When you look at this, and this is well studied, so when you look at life expectancy amongst Black women and Black men, they are lower than white men and women. And of course, we're talking the U.S. So this is very, 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 very well documented. But I want to just kind of focus on a line here. I know that we still have the story to continue, but this is probably the strongest sentence here. I just want to
go back and read it, it says, while blatant racism may not always be involved, because blatant racism is not, we're better. We're a better society, but it's this, it's the structural racism that exists within the system that is profound, and not only within the healthcare system, but within American life. When you look at banking and housing and education and finance and media, and you look at everything, there has been structural discrimination against Black people. Yeah. That is a fact that nobody can argue, that have left Black Americans suppressed and behind when compared to white Americans. You look at wealth accumulated by Black people. Well, how could they accumulate wealth? Wealth accumulation in the U.S. is done through home ownership. But what happens when in the 1900s, Black people could not live in certain parts of town? That was called redlining, also very well documented. So they were living in areas of the country that were not ideal. So there was no wealth that could be accumulated.
I think that's the part that people miss. It's like, if people don't see the blatant racism, like calling someone out of their name or specifically putting a name to it, right? Saying something racist so people recognize it. People don't see it. Dr. Derry, I could tell you about, I walk through my life, even if everything is great, even if everything is quote unquote great, I walk through this world with a low level of stress all the time. All the time. Because I'm thinking about what may happen when I'm out and about. I'm worried, thinking about my children, what may be said. I'm looking at people so there's a low level of stress all the time, wondering if people are looking at me differently because of my skin color. When I was pregnant, the last 2 months of my pregnancy was terrifying because I was so scared of going to the hospital and not being believed or heard as a Black woman. Because, you know, I'm in public health. I know this. I know the Black maternal death rates. I was scared to death. So I walked around with a level of stress that other people don't have.
So listen, as a developed country with some of the highest maternal mortality rates, which disproportionately affects Black mothers, it's time that we start implementing more programs like A Mother's Heart to ensure that all women are getting the care they deserve during pregnancy. In order to address these disparities, it is important to recognize the role of systemic racism and bias in the healthcare system and to invest in culturally competent care and targeted interventions for African-American women. Additionally, addressing social determinants of health, such as poverty, lack of access to education and healthcare, is essential in improving birth outcomes for African-American women and their babies.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Hickerson, at hopehickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.